Society 13 and Progzilla Radio proudly present Prog Watch with your friend and host, Big Tony Rousek, a.k.a. Prog's Watch. Well, friends, welcome to Prague Watch. Our opener was Sist Pa Plan, a classic tune from the Kaipa album Solo in 1978. According to Google Translate, my Swedish is not so good, that means last on the plane. For those who don't know, Kaipa was the band that put the great Roine Stolt on the map. And Mr. Roine Stolt is the subject of this show and will be the subject of another show in a few weeks' time, because I was lucky enough to score an interview with him a few weeks ago, and I want to spread my sheer joy over two shows. Plus, the guy's pretty much Prague royalty. He's been in five really important bands over the years, including the aforementioned Kaipa, the Flower Kings, Transatlantic, the Tangent, and Agents of Mercy. He's also worked and toured with the likes of Steve Hackett and made an album with Mr. Yes himself, John Anderson, last year. So yeah, I was a little bit stoked to score this interview, and I'm very excited to share it with you, oh faithful listener. Roine doesn't write a lot of short 2 or 3 minute tunes, so I'm not going to talk a lot. I've got a lot of music planned and more than 20 minutes of interview, and our friend Rob Fisher will be weighing in a little later on Roine's latest project, the new Kaipa de Capo album. So let's move on to a little bit of that interview. All right, great. Like I said, okay. It's so fantastic to talk to you. You are like one of my heroes, really.
Oh, really?
So I guess I'll get rolling here. Yeah, you've been in a number of legendary bands, and you've worked with some of the top names in music in a career that much goes back to the beginning of what we call progressive rock. So how did you get started? Did you come from a musical family? And who were your early influences?
I wouldn't really say, well, my mother played a piano, and I had her brother play the piano too, but he was more like a jazz pianist sort of. So sometimes we visited them, you know, and he had the piano and he had drums and like upright bass and stuff like that. So we were sort of playing around with all these instruments, you know, when I was a kid, more like a kid, like 6, 7, 8 years old.
Okay.
And my mother played a piano, but we did not have a piano at home. My grandmother had a piano. So there was lots of listening to the radio when I was a kid from an early age, probably like 3, 4 years old, something like that, you know. Okay. And the radio was on, you know, and we had anything from Frank Sinatra to Bing Crosby and lots of popular music at the time before the Beatles.
okay.
I don't know, there was just something about music that was intriguing. And then I remember when I had a friend who could actually play the guitar, and this was probably around the age of 12, I think. 11 or 12.
Okay.
And he could play the guitar. And I had a guitar because my daddy had a guitar, but he never learned to play this guitar. So it just hanging on the wall. And then I got to know this new friend, and he was playing guitar, and he was playing classical guitar, but he was interested in rock music also. So we were sort of, you know, getting into the Doors and Jimi Hendrix and all that stuff, you know.
All right.
King Crimson.
Mm-hmm.
He actually, I learned to play the first few chords, you know, because we were playing Beatles songs and stuff like that. And so he showed me a few chords, and from there on, I pretty much, you know, just spending a couple of hours a day at home, you know, and listening to records and learning to play the guitar. And both me, I have two brothers, you know, and both brothers, they are my older brother, Pierre. He was pretty much into the same kind of music, you know. We were, of course, listening to the Beatles, and then, you know, later came, you know, bands like Allman Brothers, you know, if you were into the blues. And,
okay.
And Yes and King Crimson and all these bands, Weather Report. So you know, we saved up some money and we bought records and there was, you know, an interest, and as I said, my mother was playing the piano, so she was interested in music and did understand pop music, you know. So when the Beatles came along, she really liked it, and she understood jazz, and she understood classical music. So there was kind of a, you know, a variety of music we had the pop music and all that happening, and then we had the classical music and the jazz, and so yeah, there was music around in my home, but there was no one playing music professionally.
Until you and your brothers.
No, yeah, and me and my brother, and I think my older brother, we started about the same time and playing, and he was more interested in sports, and I was more interested in the music, you know. So I was spending all the time learning to play songs and trying to figure out how to bend the strings on the guitar, stuff like that, to sound like whoever, Jimi Hendrix or Peter Green or, you know, those guys.
Okay. Did one of your brothers actually play on the Flower Kings or on one of your solo projects?
Yeah. My younger brother, Michael, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
sure. I thought so.
Yeah, and he's now singing with Kai Patakopoulos. So, okay. Yeah, he's been working with music, not full-time, all the time, but he was in quite a popular pop group here in Sweden, and he was actually in the Flower Kings from the beginning, playing bass.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, for about 4 or 5 years, I think. And now we're playing together again. So he's been recording with the Flower Kings, and we've been touring. We've been to Japan and to America, you know.
Okay.
So there's music in the family, you know.
Yeah.
And my mother still loves. She's still alive, you know, and she's 84. So she still loves music, you know. And she had a very open mind, and I remember when people like Emerson, Lake and Palmer came on Swedish television, or Jimi Hendrix, she could hear that it was, you know, they were talented musicians, and she was telling me, I think she was digging Emerson, Lake and Palmer even before myself, you know.
So wow.
kind of weird, you know, mother, and you know, she was saying, Jimi Hendrix, he can really, I don't like his singing, but I really like his guitar playing. It's, you know, the blues and all the fancy stuff Jimmy did on the guitar, you know. She understood it, you know, and she still listened to music, you know, and I can play the Flower Kings music to her, and I. She loves the new Anderson Stolt album because she loves John Anderson singing, you know. So
wow.
It was a big thing, you know, when I made this album with John and you know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So it's there's lots of music in the family still, you know. All three brothers and my mother, we are into music.
That's great. Mom's 84 and she's still hip, huh?
Yeah, she's hip.
Yeah, that's
she's
great.
Even hip to King Crimson.
Wow, that's really hip.
Well, maybe not the hardcore stuff, you know, but you know, the more melodic King Crimson stuff, and Procol Harum. She loves Procol Harum too.
Oh, so. Another good band.
Yep. Mm.
So you mentioned Sweden, and your brother was in a pop group over there, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be, at least from looking from America, it seems to be like a breeding ground for progressive rock. There's bands like Kaipa. Who were there at the beginning, and then you had like Anglegard, Anecdoten, and the Flower Kings.
They
were important in the resurgence of Prague in the 90s. So what is it about Sweden? Is it?
I don't know. I don't think I have the answer to that, but no. I mean, you can speculate. And I'm thinking that maybe it has something to do with maybe the standard of living, you know. We have, people are... Let's put it this way. I think most parents have the money to actually buy a drum kit or a electric piano or a electric guitar and the amp, you know, and you know, put them in the basement to start practicing drums or electric guitar and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I think that, and we have music schools and besides that, I don't really know. I don't know why. And sometimes I'm thinking that we had some really cool music in the 60s too, you know. We had bands like Hansson and Carlson, which was like a duo of a drummer and a Hammond organ player, you know, playing kind of psychedelic Hammond music. And we had Made in Sweden, who was like a fusion trio, you know, and the guitar player from that band then went on to Blood, Sweat and Tears. And,
okay, I didn't know that.
And a few, yeah, and he was also in the Saturday Night Live orchestra for a long time, and he played with Donald Fagen and Roberta Flack and all those guys, Simon and Garfunkel, I think. So he was quite successful. And they were really, really good jazz fusion, prog fusion band, you know, in the end of the 60s. And we had a couple of other really, really interesting bands in Sweden. I think sometimes it's one band is sort of inspiring another one, you know, one generation of prog band, you know, and the younger guys are looking at, these guys 10, 15 years ago, they did this incredible music, you know, and it was really far out, and with all these psychedelic fuzz guitars and, you know, all that swirling synths and Hammond organs and all that. So I'm thinking that maybe it's because of, you know, the tradition, you know, it just builds on, you know, one band after another, you know, and that, you know, taking inspiration from other Swedish prog bands.
Progressive,
which, which Kuiper was, of course, one, you know, we had another one, Samla Mamas Manna. We had another one that's called Flesket Brin, who were really good players, you know. They were kind of almost like Zappa, Frank Zappa style music, you know. So maybe, I don't know, maybe that's the tradition, you know, is just, we're just building on that, you know, and we have lots of musical education in schools and stuff like that too. So it's
So how popular is progressive rock there today?
Well, you know, it's not, Sweden is not a big country, you know, so let's say at the peak, you know, when Flower Kings did a Flower Kings show, you know, in, let's say, in Stockholm, maybe we could pull like 500 people, something like that. So it's not like super, big, you know, not like we're playing in arenas, but you know, pretty much that's besides the really, like the bigger bands like Dream Theater, whatever, bigger progressive bands, Transatlantic, perhaps.
Sure.
We can. I mean, in Europe and in particular, but sometimes in the United States, you can have a decent size audience. But in Europe, of course, we have a bigger audience. And in Sweden, I would say prog bands, you know, if whatever Anekdoten or Anglagard or these guys are playing, that's basically it's like a couple of hundred people at the most, I would say. So it's not super big.
I'm trying to help fix that over here in the United States.
Yeah.
I'm trying to spread the word on this fantastic music. Mm. So we heard a little of Roine's musical beginnings, but let's take a little break for a tune. That was the beginning of my love for the work of this brilliant man. It comes from the album The Flower King in 1994, and it was Roine's return to progressive rock after years, after he left Kuiper, of him dabbling in more popular music forms. While this album is technically a Roine Stolt solo album, it set the template for the Flower Kings. This is the title track and the name under which the band would eventually be known, The Flower King.
Little thing, we believe in this thing. out of the gray into purple and red. See all the beautiful shades flowing out of my head. It's just a matter of time, it's just a matter of trust. Just a matter of faith, we all sleep in the dust. Don't deny, just verify the genius of it all. It's the cycle of all living. Hear the children call.
We believe in the light, we believe in love, every precious little thing. Thank you.
That was The Flower King from the Reiner Stolt album of the same name in 1994. Now let's check in with Rob Fisher, our resident reviewer, who also does his fine work for the Progressive Aspect and Prog Radar. Here's Rob weighing in on the latest project from Reiner Stolt, Kaipa da Kapo. Over the past few episodes, Progressive Discoveries has frequently taken a look at the exciting and creative prospects for progressive rock when it opens the doors and begins to absorb modern sounds and contemporary ideas. However, toward the end of 2016, Swedish band Kaipa da Kapo provided us with a timely and hugely impressive reminder of the heartfelt values and resonant vision which have always been the lifeblood of progressive rock, with the release of their album, Der Skapens Monotony. Listening to this record genuinely feels like a form of nostalgic homecoming, enfolding and uplifting you with all the warmth and security the memories of such experiences provide. The music is wonderfully alluring and intense, echoes of the past blending with experiences of the present, enticing, compelling, engrossing, and by the end of the record, leaving you happily exhausted and refreshingly satisfied. Now let's listen to a song, the title track, Der Skapens Monotony, which Google tells me roughly translate to Folly Monotony.
tomhet och kaos. För många bossar och alla frossar, men ingen vet vad föraren heter.
That was the title track to the Caipa da Capo album Der Schappen's Monotony. Now we'll get back to Rob. The key to the sheer brilliance of the album is the way they have returned to the original spirit, style, and sound of the band from when it was formed in 1973. Built around Ingmar Bergman on drums, Thomas Eriksson on bass, Hans Lunden on keyboards, and Reiner Stolt on guitar, they recorded three albums, Caipa in 1975, Inget Njet Under Solen, 1976, and Solo, 1978, with Mats Lindberg replacing Eriksson, who had left the band. Stolt and Lindberg departed not long after, but Der Schappen's Monotony marks the reunion of Bergman, Eriksson, and Stolt, who are joined by Max Lorenz on keyboards and Michael Stolt on vocals. Listening to this new album is in many ways like listening to the original three albums. As soon as you hear the opening chords, you just have the feeling that this is Prague as it was always meant to be. There is a natural energy, a sense of vitality, and joyful enthusiasm which emerges and endows the music with an organic sense of purpose and togetherness. More importantly, it showcases what can happen when good friends who enjoy each other's company get together and play music. It tells us all that the original spirit of Prague is alive, well, and thriving in the 21st century. Again, that was Rob Fisher of Prague Radar and the Progressive Aspect. When I post this show to my website, progwatch.com, I'll have links to Rob's full review of the Caipa da Capo album and to Rob's new endeavor, a blog also entitled Progressive Discoveries. Now let's continue on with more of my Reiner Stolt interview. But I've said on my show more than once, I think, that I think you're one of the most prolific writers of all time. The sheer volume of music that you've written to me is unbelievable. Yeah. And I think that 5 minutes of a Flower Kings album has more music in it than about 10 whole albums typical pop music artist of the day.
It's insane because when I look back now and as you know, we're taking another break for a couple of years now. And now when you're sort of looking back, you know, from a distance and you hear the songs, it's like I'm thinking, oh, my God, why did we put in all those melodies and riffs and stuff? It's so dense. It's so complicated, you know. Yeah. And I understand there's a certain audience for that kind of prog, you know, that like it.
Right.
It's not like Pink Floyd. They have a theme and then maybe a guitar solo and they space out with sounds and stuff like that. But in the Flower King songs, you have like 25 themes. You
know? Yeah. It's more symphonic.
It's so complicated. And I was even thinking, how could we remember that, you know, going on tour and we're playing two hours or 2.5 hours of music, doing a show. And remembering all this, you know,
how did we
do it? Like rehearsing for 5 days or something like that. It's just insane. But I mean, I'm now looking back. When you're in the middle of all this, it all comes very natural. Of course, it's like of course we can do it.
Again,
can do it. But
Anderson Stolt felt very much the same way. There was a lot of music. It just kept moving from one thing to another. It never stopped for very long.
I know, but I mean, John just kept sending stuff, you know, and I was like, can you put this in? You know, I'll try. And I put it in. Oh, yeah, that's great. I have another thing here. Well, what do you think? You know, and then I was thinking, okay, I'll put something in here and see. And I was playing to John and he said, oh, that's great. Yeah, let's keep that and, you know, move on. And then we're just building and building and building because there wasn't a plan from the beginning. He just, you know, he sent a few themes over and I started working on it and I added stuff and then I sent it back to him and he liked it. Okay. And we were just keep on building, you know, minute after minute of new music, new themes. And I was looking at the beginning of the song and said, oh, let's see if I take this theme, you know, and I build a riff, you know, the bass guitar on this. And then I add a different chord structure, you know, or a different rhythm and just, you know. That's the beauty of progressive rock, you know. You can do whatever you want, you know.
Yeah.
No one can question, is that really relevant for the song? Of course it's relevant for the song, you know. You know, but I do understand, and many people think it's probably too much. I don't know, but it's interesting, and it's fun.
So, what's your writing process like? Do you often work that way, where things just kind of evolve? Is your approach? Do you go in with like set ideas
Personally, I mean, the Anderson Stolt was a little bit different because it all started with John sending a couple of themes, you know.
Did you guys actually meet in person, or was this all done by file sharing?
No, of course we met before that. You know, met a couple of times before that. But when we were working on the album, we did not meet. We were talking on the phone, and we were mostly sending emails back and forth. You know, mm-hmm. and every day, and sometimes I had like 15 emails a day from John. thinking, oh my God, this is kind of bizarre, of course, because having all these emails from John Anderson, I think, oh God, this guy used to be in Yes, you know, and here we are, like, sending emails back and forth, you know.
Yeah, how cool.
For weeks and weeks and weeks. So it was kind of insane, but that's something that worked in the end, you know. On paper, I would probably say, "Oh no! That kind of a prospect. That's you know, you got to be in the same room and at least a couple of times, you know, or recording the basic tracks or whatever." But we did in Sweden. We recorded the basic tracks with Jonas and Felix, and Tom Brislin came over from America, and we recorded the basic tracks in the studio. And then I was overdubbing guitars, and then John was overdubbing his vocals, and we were sending back and forth. So,
okay.
And it worked. In the end, it worked, but it took some time.
So that was a little bit of a different thing for you then, to do it that way. You don't usually do it that way.
Yeah. I mean, normally when I'm writing songs, I don't spend an awful lot of time. I usually, because it was interesting because I had this conversation yesterday, I think, with Jonas Rengel, the bass player, and he felt he was sort of kind of stuck, you know, in the writing process, and he felt everything he was writing was just sounding like shit, and this is no good. It's not good enough. And I was trying to tell him that my writing process is usually I just sit down by the keyboard, something comes up, I fiddle around a few melodies, and then I try to record it very quick. And then I leave it, you know. I don't sit around for a day with something, with a new idea, because if you do, maybe by the end of the afternoon you feel it's not good enough, so you just scrap it. I don't do that. I do the basic idea, and then I leave it maybe for a couple of days or for a week, and then I go back. And if I feel, that's good, that's a nice melody, that's a nice, you know, chord structure, then I keep building on it. And then I can spend... let's say I spend a day on that, or I can go back even one more time or two more times and build and change stuff and take out the weak spots and change a few chords. So it's almost like a painter, you know, you're painting and then you leave mm-hmm. it for a few days, and then you're coming back and you see what's right and what's wrong and change the colors. And then you do this for a couple of times or a couple of days, and then you see everything clearer, you know. If you just keep on working on a song and maybe you just, you know, it's going to come out the wrong way, or you're going to get bored with the song, or you feel it's not good enough. So I think censorship is good, but I leave the censorship until later. Okay. Because you can always say, okay, that song wasn't good. It wasn't good enough. That's fine, but I'd rather not say it's not good enough before I tried, or I try to write the lyrics or sing, you know, try a different melody or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I
have an open mind, you know, and if you have an open mind, I think it's easier to sort of collect whatever is good in the end. You can hear it.
Mm-hmm. I do a little bit of this on the side, nothing like what you're doing, but so I know a little about what you're talking about as far as, you know, I mean, there's been times, and usually I'm one of those people, I like to leave it and like go away from it for a while and then come back. But there have been a few occasions where I just like spit out something over like 3 days, and it was really good, you know, and it was just, I don't know, the muse was with me or something, but usually I like to leave it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now, have you ever run into the situation where you kept going back and kept fixing things, or how do you know when to quit, when it's, you know, because I mean, some people tend to like polish and polish and polish until they polish away the whole thing and there's nothing left of the funness that was there in the beginning is gone because you just got rid of it.
Well, that's a possibility, but I think what I do is I, as I said, I try to not work for too long, you know. But sometimes I go back. I find something that I think is interesting. Then I go back and I work with it. I try to really build something, you know, and make it into a full song, and maybe with vocals and lyrics and everything. And then in the end, still, it doesn't feel right, you know. And then you have to be honest with yourself and say, wasn't good enough. But then at least, okay, I wasted 4 days or 5 days, but it's not the end of the world, you know, because sometimes you write a song and then you, well, after 2 hours you have the basic chord structures and the basic idea of the song and even the melody, and then you sit down with a notebook and then you start writing the lyrics and you find yourself in the afternoon you have written a song, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that happens also. But usually when it comes to the more complex multi-part progressive rock songs, it takes some time, you know, and you take away stuff and you put in new stuff and you change the tempo. Well, these days when you have sequencers, you can sort of bend the songs and twist them, you know, with tempos different keys or, you know, whatever, different orchestrations.
Yeah, there's a lot of tools there in the computer.
Yeah, and it can change, you know, because it's, I mean, the sounds, you know, and the orchestration is sometimes important, sometimes it's of course less important, you know, but sometimes it's sort of almost gets like an important part of the song is actually the sound or the colors of, you know, the orchestration sort of. It's really, it becomes part of the song, you know. So it's, I would say it's, I do have a basic procedure, you know, the way I work with songs, but there's always like exceptions to that, of course, you know. Sometimes you catch a song and it just takes about a couple of hours and it ends up on a Flower Kings album or Transatlantic or whatever. And sometimes you really work hard with a song, but for whatever reason, it doesn't, you know, in the end, it doesn't cut. It really doesn't feel like the best song you've written. So you just have to, you put it in, you know, I have lots of songs. I have lots of songs. People say, oh, Reiner, they, you know, Flower Kings, they release too many albums. It's too much music, et cetera, et cetera. And the funny part is when people say, oh, yeah, Reiner, he released everything he writes. And then I'm thinking, oh no, I'm not.
You have a lot of
fortunately, I'm not, because then you have like 5 or 6 albums a year, and so I don't. But it, you know,
do you ever go back to any of that stuff and listen, try to pull out some what was good about this or
well,
that?
Well, I do sometimes, and sometimes you're surprised because you find something, and usually not in the form that you did back then, but you listen to it maybe after 5 years, and you take it and you think, oh, this song could really be a nice ballad if you take down the tempos like 20 BPM down, mm-hmm. or something like that, or you're just embarrassed by the lyrics and you scrap the lyrics and write something new and suddenly it turns into a really nice song, you know. So to have an open mind, I think it's best, and not to take it I don't know, don't let the songs be too personal, and you have to, you know, be critical towards the songs.
Objective.
And sometimes sometimes it's difficult to hear people say things about your music or talk about your songs. A band master, maybe they like the song or they don't like the song for whatever reason, and don't take it personal, you know. It's just one of those songs you're writing, and you know, you don't have to play every song you write, you know.
Right. Like I said, I'm going to save the second half of the interview for another Reiner Stolz special. Roine Stolt special. So now let's hear some more great Roine Stolt music. This is Wreck of HMS Nemesis from Roine's second solo album, Hydrophonia, in 1998.
Thank you.
Again, that was Wreck of HMS Nemesis from the 1998 Reunerstolt album Hydrophonia. We haven't actually heard a Flower Kings tune yet on this show, so let's do that now. This is from the 2012 Flower Kings album Banks of Eden, and it's a song called For Those About to Drown.
The song she sings has lost its soul. The king is busy with his plot and promises of love forgotten. The words are bold, but without soul. So a stranger comes to town with the promise of salvation. For those about to drown, smile while you carry on. You know that the thrill is gone. Smile until the light goes down. It's the nature of the game. Rising banners on navy skylines. You call.
Rising banner.
for those about to drown from the Flower King's 2012 album called Banks of Eden. Now let's finish things up with one of several, quote, extracurricular projects in which Roine has been involved. This is from a band called The Tangent, which featured Roine Stolt alongside Andy Tillison, Guy Manning, and Flower King's alums Jonas Reingold and Zoltan Zors. This is part of the title suite from the debut album by The Tangent entitled The Music That Died Alone.
Hide the heart in a secret place, spirit locked behind a public face. Lost in our forgotten years, imprisoned by our mental prayers, playing on me now into the atmosphere. Such jumbled stay through dictated ways. The bar lines slash like red tape across the manuscript of life. All its melodies are trapped in templates and designer culture's knives, flaying up to be the school. Play around, even if no one hears. And in our sweet time, in our darkened halls, we'll sneak a listen to the music that died alone. Sometimes chances are
secret place. Spirit unlocked behind a public face. In our forgotten years, imprisoned by our mental fears. Sometimes chance to listen. We'll sneak a listen to the music that died alone.
Well, that's about all we have time for, and I really worked hard to cram all this great stuff into one 90-minute episode. Look for part two in a few weeks, which will also be jam-packed full of great Rainer Stolt music, including more Flower Kings, Kaipa, Agents of Mercy, and the Anderson Stolt project from last year. I'll see you next week for a regular variety show. In the meantime, continue to prog on, brothers and sisters.